you know, when you think of yoga, they think I have to be, you know, in this pretzel position in order to be good at yoga. And I like to immediately alleviate that fear by saying, well, are you breathing? Because if you're breathing, you're practicing yoga.
Welcome back to the You Need a Counselor podcast. This is a show presented by Heart and Solutions Counseling Agency. We release new episodes every Sunday at 5 p.m. Central and encourage you to batch up that laundry, put away the dishes, plan for the week ahead, or do any other task that might seem daunting while you give our show a listen. You might just be encouraged to call your therapist, connect with this week's guest, or seek out those services you've been considering for a while but haven't made the commitment to yet. If you are in the state of Iowa and are in need of mental or behavioral health counseling, give us a call at 1-800-531-4236. Enjoy the show.
Hello, welcome back to the You Need a Counselor podcast. My name is Dr. Julie Johnson. I'm the president and founder here at Heart and Solutions Therapy and Behavioral Health Counseling here in Iowa.
Hi, I am Carol, and I'm a transformation catalyst and chronic pain hypnotherapist. And I'm here in Winnipeg, Canada, and I am your guest host today.
And I'm Krista Hunt. I am the vice president in charge of our behavioral health department at Heart and Solutions. And this is our podcast, You Need a Counselor. So we are designed for people curious about counseling, but have barriers keeping them from experiencing the benefits of counseling. Our mission is to share stories about counseling, good, bad, and indifferent, and spread the message that everyone can benefit from mental health and behavioral health counseling services.
Our guest today is Eva Zobian-Wolf. You guys will remember her from a previous episode. Just one of the kindest guests I think we have ever talked to. And when I listened to your episode, I just think just the word kindness just continues to come up. So welcome back to Eva. Eva used to be a nurse, and now she is a mind-body specialist. She is also now a certified yoga therapist. So we're really excited to hear about that as well. For the last 5 years, our guest today has worked with those with chronic illness, chronic pain, worked with stress reduction techniques to avoid burnout or avoid symptoms of burnout. So we're very, very excited to have her back today. Welcome, Eva.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
Absolutely. So since the last time we talked to you, you have become a certified yoga therapist. So can you tell us what is a certified yoga therapist?
So yoga therapy is the more therapeutic branch of yoga, meaning that it's a much deeper instructional base in terms of a yoga teacher is usually somewhere around 200 hours, and you'll get 200 or 500 hour yoga teachers, and they're focused in on the practice of yoga, teaching yoga, maybe working with clients individually or doing group classes. A yoga therapist is focusing in on the whole person and using all of the philosophies and teaching modalities to look at how to bring this to a person in a way that makes sense for them for the purpose of improving overall health and wellness in mind, in body, and in spirit. And so it's very much person-centric care.
In transitioning to a yoga therapist, what drastic improvements or changes have you seen since transitioning to that part?
I was really lucky in that the person that I did all of my training with, everything came through the lens of yoga therapy. So even while I was a yoga teacher, I was incorporating a lot of those principles in how I was leading group classes, or if I was working with somebody individually. I was always, and this really tied into why I made the switch from ICU nurse to yoga therapist, was because when I was working with clients, I saw improvements in sleep, in a matter of weeks. I saw improvements in blood pressure in a matter of weeks. And seeing those improvements of reduced stress, reduced pain, reduced inflammation. And now we're finally understanding just how important it is to reduce inflammation in our body, and that chronic illness is pretty much all derived from inflammation and stress.
Interesting. So, of course, having the knowledge that I have as well, I'm just like, okay, so what's the starting point? What's the starting point for someone that is experiencing chronic illness or chronic pain? Where would you recommend they start?
Say more about that. When you mean where do they start? I mean, what are you thinking of, like, where do I start a session with them, or where do they start in terms of being able to start to make changes in their life?
Yeah, and because I'm all about taking personal responsibility, right? So I know that for many of the clients that you may work with, they have been probably to other medical professionals and they can't find a result, right? So what would your recommendation be since, you at this point have delved into it from a mind body perspective? Your recommendation to them would be to start where exactly?
I would say first start with your breath and be aware of what's happening in my body in this moment. Really learning to tap into what's happening in my body is a reflection of my mind, and what's happening in my mind is a reflection of what's happening in my body. So with anybody that I work with, we start at the very, very, very outward and just real basic foundational movements of how do we be in tune with our breath? How do we just take this, one of the things that I whenever somebody says, well, I don't, when you think of yoga, they think I have to be, in this pretzel position in order to be good at yoga. And I like to immediately alleviate that fear by saying, well, are you breathing? Because if you're breathing, you're practicing yoga. You're practicing yoga every day, especially in those moments where we take that exhale, right? Or we before we start to respond to something, or if we're in a moment of chaos, or we're recognizing that something bothers us, when we take that moment to just step back for a second and breathe in and sigh out. That's the one of the biggest components of yoga, and that's why yoga and mental health care are so deeply connected. Because if we're not in tune with what's happening in our body, it's very difficult to get in tune with what's happening in our head.
Yeah, and you mentioned reducing inflammation, and I feel like you said, that's something we've heard a lot about lately, about how that does like have a huge effect on everything in your body. Can you give some examples of how you do use yoga to help reduce inflammation in your patients or clients?
Everything that we do, it was interesting because we were just I was just working on a workshop with some folks where we were talking about different chronic health problems, and I said, you're going to hear me say the exact same thing on repeat, and I want you to pay attention to that pattern, because we're talking about blood pressure, high blood pressure. It's inflammation in the body, right? It's the stress. When people think stress, they think I can't pay my light bill, or my mother-in-law is coming to visit, or I've got to have this difficult conversation with a coworker, and that's stress in my life. And separating it from stress in my life to stress in my body, whereas, what I bring to my clients is paying attention to all of those times where we tightened up. Whether we're watching a TV show and somebody's hanging on the edge of a cliff and we're sitting there and we're all tight, we're like, oh my gosh, what's going to happen? To, we're driving down the highway and somebody exits from the far left lane to the immediate exit right there, right in front of us, and everything in our body just tightens up, all the way down. And depending on the state of our nervous system, we're either going to release a good portion of it, or we're going to hang on to a good portion of it. And where yoga and everything that it encompasses can be assisting in that is that relaxation of release and releasing. So we're not just releasing one particular muscle, we're not releasing just one particular area of the body, but instead we're coming back to the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis, and we're slowing that process or coming out of that process so that we're not spitting out cortisol with every single breath and every single interaction that we have with somebody. Instead, we're introducing cooling practices that are calming the nervous system. You know, and it's something as simple as before I say anything in a conversation, I take that moment to breathe in and have a long exhale out. And something as simple as that helps us to shift out of that high cortisol reactivity to a I don't understand what you meant. Can you say that in a different way rather than the, you know, I'm coming at you and turning this conversation into a conflict rather than a resolution.
Yeah, I love what you do with your background as a nurse, because we think about nursing, we think about physical health. And then you were able to say, okay, there's something more here, right? There's healing of the body, which is so important. But when we come to chronic pain, when we come to chronic illness, when we come to the diseases and the disorders that are caused by stress or that are exacerbated by stress and that long-term stress response that we might not even know that we are in, and we might have been in for years and not known it, and we forget what it feels like not to be in that constant state of stress. And the mind-body connection that you talk about, I always love this because our bodies do not understand. They don't understand that we are not in physical danger. They don't understand that we are, if I'm thinking about that person that I'm watching on TV on the cliff hanging on, my body, my brain, cognitively, I can say out loud to somebody, I'm not hanging off a cliff. The more empathetic we are, the more difficulty our body has to be able to understand, I'm not hanging off a cliff right now. One of the coolest things, one of the coolest kind of demonstrations I'll do with this is if we close our eyes and we picture walking into a grocery store and going to the fruit section and picking out a very, very juicy, bright yellow lemon, and we picture cutting it in half and we picture what it smells like, and then we picture taking a slice of it and putting it into our mouths, right? Our body has a reaction. That description was not very detailed. And yet, as I'm saying it, and my brain, cognitively, I know that I'm the one introducing the idea of the lemon. I'm not eating a lemon, but my mouth doesn't know that and started salivating or started like, my body started tensing up. Krissa made a gross face, right? Of like, bleh, because our body doesn't understand that we're not about to process a lemon, that we don't need that extra saliva. And in that same way, the more empathetic we are to other people's situations or to the situations that we think about, that we play out in our mind that may happen, may not happen, the way that we're thinking about something that is a fact. This happened. My partner left me. I got fired from my job. These are facts, but our body reacts to that in the way that we think about it. And so if we think, well, my partner left me, oh good, I was looking to, right? I was like, I'm ready to move on and be single, right? then our body is going to have a different reaction to that narrative that we've got going on versus if we think nobody is ever going to love me again. Nobody's ever going to be want to be with me again. That was my only chance at love. Our bodies have a completely different reaction to that narrative, even though that event happened. Nobody can argue that. Nobody will argue that. But the way that we, that our mind interprets those things is how our body responds. And even when we know it, and we hear people all the time say, I know it in my head. I know that it's not true that my boss hates me. In my, I know that it's true, not true, right? That my mother loves my sister more than me, right? I know it in my head that it's not true, but I still feel it that way because our body does not understand. And so what you're talking about with taking those deep breaths, with being able to connect with our body, to notice, where am I tense in my body when I think about those things, allows us to send the message that our brain knows into our body and lets our body respond to that information. Same way that we do it with EMDR, we're letting our brain talk to our body and our nervous system. And we're opening that line of communication that can so frequently be closed and shut down. And I know you have a history working with a trauma-informed lens. Can you tell us a little bit about why somebody's mind-body connection might be shut down or might not be communicating or flowing as well as we would want it to?
Absolutely. Gosh, you brought up so many good points. So I'm glad you asked that very specific question. So when I'm talking with clients, I try to remind them that their body and our sympathetic nervous system is really focused in on, am I safe in this moment? And if we're the, and it's a very, it's a survival mechanism, right? So it's a basic component of it is, I'm being charged by a woolly mammoth and my body's response is to get me to a place where I can survive being charged by the woolly mammoth, right? It's, we don't want, it's all on autopilot. We don't want to have to sit there and stare and think and go, well, maybe it's a friendly woolly mammoth. Maybe he wants to play. Maybe he's got a toy he wants to show me, you know, and instead we get trampled or we get eaten or whatever it is that woolly mammoths did. In a person with a really hyperactive stress level body, there's a disconnect that happens and there's an inability to be able to connect and just make simple connections, right? You know, we all sit there and we think A plus B equals C. And we're like, yeah, absolutely. A plus B equals C. When we are in a high stress brain, it has been shut off from that ability to be able to make the connection. And we'll sit there and we'll look at something that we know. We'll go A plus B equals alphabet. A plus B equals a mirror. A plus B equals, and we sit there and we keep making these disconnected connections because we can't think it all the way through. So when we're having a conversation with somebody, and we say something that may be triggering, or we say something that they're just, it's not there for them. Meaning that there's that disconnect that comes in, and what we've got to do is pull it back enough to say, let's get to a space where you can hear me. And the language that we use is incredibly important. And I love that you brought this up because this is just such a phenomenal point of contention with nurses, doctors, anybody that works in the healthcare system, and then their patients. because everybody's coming at it from two different points. The nurses and the doctors are coming at it from their stress brain, and then the patients are coming at it from their stress brain. And there's this disconnect that's happening where if we can all just take that moment to, you know, come in, breathe, and start from a very basic, hi, my name is Eva, and I'm here to help you with what your problem is today. What is going on with you? What's happening? But if I'm having this conversation of, hey, I'm Eva, I'm, you know, I'm here and we're going to do these things, and I'm not even looking at you. I'm more interacting on my computer. One of my pet peeves is that "Are you safe?" question. That, you know, every nurse has to ask of every person that comes in, whether they're in a family clinic, whether they're in the hospital, whether they're in the ER, everybody has to ask that question. And to me, that was always a really important question that I would always ask people to step out of the room if there was anybody else in there, because I want to be able to look you in the eye, and I want to be able to not just see your reaction, but see your body's reaction to when I ask you the question, are you safe at home? Is there anybody causing you harm? Is there someone that you feel in danger with, or do you feel in danger from yourself? But if I'm more interacting with the computer and I'm not paying attention, I'm not looking at you, A, you don't see that I care. And B, I missed something in your, that maybe you hit it in your voice, but I missed it in your face, or I missed it in your eyes, where you looked off to a side before you went and created that cultivated answer. And so, you know, when we're having this conversation, really bringing it down to basics and foundation of, not only am I here and I'm present, but I'm listening to you. I'm looking at your eyes. I'm watching your body language, and I'm creating a space where you feel comfortable in saying the uncomfortable. And if I can't create that, then I'm missing the mark completely in being of service, being, whether I'm a healthcare provider, whether I'm a mental health professional, whether I'm, you know, the person at the flower stand selling you flowers, you know, all of each one of those is a moment to be of service and to say, I see you, I hear you. What do you need right now? How can I support you?
I want to sit with that for a little bit, because there's so many directions that I can go, so many questions that I could ask. And the one that I'm being led to ask, which is very often, is, you are there for, I'm certain most times, everyone, right? And you're there for this person in that moment, and you're saying you're missing the mark if you're not seeing or hearing certain things. You're human too, right? So my question to you is, in those moments where you do miss something, because we're, as human beings, we're going to miss something, how do you handle those moments? How do you navigate those moments, understanding that just like the person sitting in front of you, you also have your own stuff going on? So how do you navigate that?
Thank you for that question. That's one of the big reasons that led me into this transition in my career as well, too. I did not realize the extent of my burnout in terms of how I was interacting with people. My burnout presented in the way that I saw it and recognized it as sleep issues and health issues. And I did not see the way that it was impacting and impairing how I connected with people until very late. And so, yeah, there's a lot of instances in my career where I missed the mark. And this is where it's incredibly important in doing this work, that you're doing it for yourself first, before you're, and all along while you're also doing this work with other people, because extending kindness and compassion and non-judgment to others is absolutely useless and irrelevant if you're not extending it to yourself, because of exactly that. You're not perfect. I'm not perfect. None of us are perfect. However, we live in a society that a lot of times tells us to expect perfection from ourselves. And if we're not perfect, then we need to be working so much harder to achieve that perfection in every area of our life. And that's the reason that we've got so much stress and burnout in our current life, is because we're expecting people to perform at a level that they're just not capable of mentally or physically. And so offering that kindness and compassion to ourselves is a way of, Julie, you brought this up earlier when you were talking about the way that we frame things. So in a conversation, when we're talking about paying attention to how we use our words, so a lot of times when I'm talking with people, I'll say things like, if this feels comfortable, if this feels the right time, or I invite you to notice and be a witness of yourself, and really leaning into what feels most comfortable for you in this moment. What do you feel called to pay attention to? What keeps coming up over and over for you? Because it's those patterns of, you know, we say things like, well, you know, I'm really wanting to be healthier, but I'm just having a really difficult time with it. Just that statement right there, I'm putting up obstacles to myself in the words that I'm using. I'm giving myself that, I really want to do this, but it's really hard and I don't know how to do that. And instead, giving ourselves kindness and compassion to do it imperfectly. So, you know, one of the coolest things that I've heard was somebody saying, instead of saying, I'm tired, say, I'm healing, I'm recovering, I'm rejuvenating. Because by saying I'm tired, I tell my body, well, I'm tired, I don't have enough energy. But if I reframe it, instead of saying I'm tired, say, at this moment, my body's healing. And we think, you know, okay, that's just such a minute difference. Like, really, what difference does it make? It's the energetic imprint in the body. It's that, again, we're talking cellular level. Yes, I'm tired versus I'm recharging. It's I love that. On a cellular level, our mitochondria are hearing these things, and the level of engagement that they have, if they hear they're tired, they're like, oh, cool, we can Netflix and chill. Like, we don't have to do anything right now. But if I say I'm rejuvenating, all of a sudden my mitochondria are hearing, oh, okay, this is us. We're supposed to be doing more. We're supposed to step up. And it's a very subtle shift in journaling, in paying attention to the words that we use. We start to really observe the patterns that we have. So one thing that has been coming up a lot for me lately is, it's not a mistake, it's a lesson, it's an opportunity. If I say mistake, it gives me this, again, it's this idea that I was supposed to do it perfectly. But if I take away the word mistake and I look at it, either it's moving me forward or it's providing information to me on how to improve me. I'm always a student of me. And whatever I do is either going to propel me forward or it's going to provide an opportunity for me to have some new information that I can work on. Now, it's not I tried and I failed, or I tried and that was not what I was supposed to do. Instead, looking at it as, okay, this is kind of like that pinball machine where I went this way and then a bumper shooed me off to another side and it pushed me into the path that I'm supposed to be on. Now it's not, it happened to me, it's it happened for me. So even in, and that the thing to remember too is that two things can be true at the same time. I can say, this situation sucks. This is horrible to have to go through. And it provided something that I can in turn use this information in what way? How do I use this information to inform the choices that I make, the things that I do, the people that I talk to?
So I completely agree, and at the same time, I disagree too, which is a conundrum for me sometimes. So I'm working at the part now where I'm disagreeing, because I think often, yes, I see the value in or words, you know, having power. I completely agree with that. I also think it has a cop-out mentality too, where you want to switch words just because one word makes you feel a certain way versus another one, or a term or a phrase makes you feel a certain way versus another. So where's the line? Where's that line where it's okay, if I say mistake versus a lesson, what is mistake bringing up for me in terms of the feelings? And is that something that I need to address? So where's that line? How do you navigate that part? Because I'm very good at bullshitting myself too. So I'm asking it for me, really.
So I would ask you to rephrase that, because how do you take, because in all of this, in every single thing that we do, it's your pace, your journey, your decision. You can decide, is this something that I am willing to observe in this moment? And is this something that I am willing to start to do the work on in this moment? And part of using all of the yoga modalities is recognizing the role of karma. And when we think of karma, we think of that balance, right? I do good, I get good. I do bad, I get
revenge.
Bad. And that's not, that's
the cultural
totally
context
not it.
Of karma.
Yeah, yes. And it's totally, there's a different lens to karma, in that karma is the patterns that keep showing up in our life. So if we keep dating the same person, or we keep going into jobs where we feel undervalued, there's a karmic lesson that's in there. And each one of those situations is an opportunity for us to learn to stand in our value, to listen to our intuition. Like, there's so many different things in that for us. And we choose when we're ready to move forward. So this returns all of the autonomy and accountability and relation and responsibility to the person by saying, it's not, again, it's not wrong. It's, are you ready? And if you're ready, then here's some tools for you to use to see how that works for you. And again, it's at your pace, it's at your comfort level, and it's always your decision. So if we see a pattern that's coming up all the time and saying, well, why is this happening to me? Then what we're going to do is we're going to just gently try to reframe that in, well, what's something that can be learned from that? What is, you know, what, you know, and for me, I'm not going to bring up the feelings of it, because that's more your role, right? That's, I'm going to come at it from the body and say, where does this show up in your body? What do you notice, in what responds in your body when this comes up? And then how can we use movement, and how can we use affirmations and the chakras and all the other different energetic components, and really look at, is this something that you're ready and willing to work on? And if not, then how can you be kind and compassionate to yourself when you notice these things coming up? and not beating yourself up when this comes around again.
I think that we get a little bit afraid of having a conflicting belief with maybe the beliefs that we've always held, the beliefs that we grew up learning were true, because as a child, we have certain beliefs that are said to us in all different ways, verbal, non-verbally, and in a family unit, there are corrections that are made intentionally and most often unintentionally that happen when we go against the grain of that. And one of the biggest one of the biggest ways that that continues to happen in family units in particular is that, or one of the techniques that's used to keep that family unit believing the same thing and having people not stray out of the family unit, is this idea that you do not want to be delusional. And I don't mean it in the clinical sense. I mean it in the cultural sense, right? Of like, that person is Delulu, right? We don't want people to think that about us. So there is a fear that inherently gets placed very often within a family unit of going against the thought process of that family unit. And so, for example, the high achieving family unit that expects certain grades, and then the child that's like, I'm happy getting C's. Like I am, because that frees up more time for skateboarding, right? And so that child is going to get all kinds of messages because they're going against the culture that is set within that family intentionally or most likely unintentionally. And so they're going to get a C, and the reaction that the family gives to that is going to determine whether there's a sense of I'm allowed to be fine with the effort that I'm putting in, with the results that I'm getting, or I'm not okay to listen to. If I'm okay with it, I need to have it line with what my family is okay with and what's acceptable for me to get for grades in this family. And so there's it's not a punishment, but there's these messages that get sent, right? So it's either like, oh, I am praising my daughter because she got all A's, and oh, you got all C's, right? I'm not saying you're not allowed to get C's in this family. Maybe I am, but I'm even if I'm not saying that out loud to that child is feeling the pressure to not go against the beliefs and the culture of the family. And that feeling of that fear of going against the beliefs of the family in our actions or even in our own heads can be so strong and so powerful that even as adults, if I believe that in order to be a worthwhile human being, I need to work outside of the home, okay? If that was the intent, if all the dinner conversation about when I grow up was about what are you going to do for work and what, you know, what do you want to be when you grow up? And if that's all the messages that I was getting, and I was getting no role modeling of people who are worthwhile human beings who don't work outside of the home, right? If I've never seen that before, and I say out loud to my family, I think I'm going to be a stay-at-home mom when I have a child, right? That's what's going to work for me and my partner. There's that fear of my family is going to think that I am delusional to think that I could do that, right? And they might look at me the same way that they might if I say I'm going to be an astronaut when I grow up, right? That like condescending kind of feeling of like, oh, that's so nice, sweetheart. And so we get these messages that tell us it's not safe to believe what we believe, and it's not safe to change our beliefs. And so if we have, because we'll be called a hypocrite, right? We'll be called delusional. We'll be like, oh, she thinks she's this. She thinks she's that, right? She doesn't care about other people. She's causing arguments at family dinner because she's believing these things and we don't agree with that. There's so much fear of that as humans, going back to survival, because we are social creatures, and we, back when we were fighting animals and hunting, we needed a tribe of people. And so there's so much fear that gets built up, and it's not our fault. It is not our fault when that happens. But if we can see that that's the fear, if I, sometimes what we'll do with clients when we talk about reframing things, right? People will be like, that sounds like a stupid thought. I don't actually believe that. If somebody's been left by their partner and I say, you know what, the thought that we might think about or the mantra we might try to connect with here is, this is a new beginning, right? As opposed to, my entire relationship and love life is gone and I'm worthless now. So if we think this is a new beginning, now, as a client, I may be like, that sounds like nonsense, because I don't think it's a new beginning, right? But what it takes to change the body's chemistry is not believing it. It is hearing it sometimes. And so one thing we talk about is willingness, and we'll say, okay, are you willing to do a silly experiment? And so there is research that says if your face is in a smile, even if you don't feel it, that your body responds and your chemicals respond, and at a cellular level, you respond, and it does impact your mood. And so we'll say, okay, put a pen in between your teeth. Now it feels like nonsense. And it's like, smiling is going to do nothing. It's fake. It's pretend. It's not real. I feel like I'm Delulu right now, right? As I'm doing this. But when we can be willing to do it, then that fear, if we can acknowledge it, we can quiet that fear a little bit. And sometimes just the doing it, I don't know, it seems ridiculous to reframe something and to say it when we don't believe it. It still works in our body. It still works on that cellular level. So I love this conversation. I think it is so cool. It's the courage to be wrong. So if I try a new belief about something, right? If I got fired and I'm like, okay, I honestly feel my body is telling me I am going to be homeless next month and I'm going to die in the street because I don't have electricity, right? My body is telling me that. My body is preparing to do that. I feel the wet rain on my body, right? So our body is doing that. And then if we say, I'm just going to say the words out loud, I am going to get a new job. This is a new beginning. I'm going to get a new job. It's going to be better, right? Even if I don't believe it, my body doesn't understand. It doesn't understand that I'm not eating a lemon. It doesn't understand that I don't believe these things. And so it will respond that way. So what a great discussion, you guys. This is, I love having these discussions. We love having you as a guest, Eva. It's just awesome what you're doing. And I think it's such a need with especially healthcare providers, being able to have the understanding of how our mental health and how our thoughts and our stress levels impact our physical health. You talked about self-care for health providers, which is so important if we're going to be present with our clients. You know, they say that the highest percentage of smokers is doctors and social workers, right? Those are the two highest professions for smoking. And there's a reason for that. Those are stressful professions. I think it makes it even more important that we're doing those things for ourselves, having that self-compassion as well before we try to give it to others. So I just love that. Well, you know, we are running low on time, but I do want to just ask you about referring to counseling, because I know that you do that quite a bit, and you had talked about, you know, that sometimes it's missing in the medical field. So can you tell us a little bit about when somebody might be referred to counseling while also doing either the trauma-informed yoga treatment planning or doing the individual coaching?
Yeah, absolutely. And there's a great collaborative experience there when, because we've talked about this a little bit in terms of, you know, recognizing when something comes up and how do we reframe that? Well, we can use the body to create that reframing, but when it comes to being able to talk through those experiences, that's not my scope. And so using the combination of working with a mental health provider that's either trained in yoga or collaborating with a mental health provider where, you know, I'm working with them and then they're working with their mental health provider. And we even have conversations between both providers in terms of these are the things that we're focusing on. These are the things that came up in our session. So because we all know that when you're in the middle of it, when you're down in the muck and you're trying to wade through all of the things, a lot of times we get so caught up in the emotions that we miss certain portions of it. And so then when we go to our mental health provider and we're like, okay, I came up, I did my yoga session with Eva, but like I remember this, but I don't remember everything. So having those conversations where we collaborate is incredibly beneficial as well too. But really, I'm of the opinion that somebody should be working with a counselor, a mental health provider in some capacity throughout life, because we're always needing, it's a resource that's available for us to, somebody on the outside saying, hey, here's something for you to consider, or maybe this is something, are you ready to start working on this at this point? We shouldn't be coaching ourselves, right? Like there's a reason we have all of these resources around us, is to be able to have different people to help us through different seasons of life. And I always joke with my clients, I'm like, my goal is to work myself out of a job. I don't want you working with me for the next 20 years. You can come back anytime you want. However, this should not be a codependent relationship. I should be empowering you to be able to navigate through your life. And then when you come to a new bump or a new layer of, you know, you touched on this quite a bit, Julie, when we get a new layer of, this was not me, this was something that was said to me over and over in my childhood, and now it's coming up and it's starting to affect me on a daily level. This is a time for me to, A, go back and have this conversation with my mental health provider, and then B, let me go work with a yoga therapist and figure out where it's showing up in my body. Is it in an illness that I have? Is it in a area of stiffness? Is it creating a dysfunctional movement pattern? You know, where is it showing up in my body? Mental health provider is, how do we unlock this and get rid of it? And then let me give you the tools through the mind, whereas I'm coming at it through the body.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you could give a suggestion then to somebody who's on the fence about starting counseling or starting yoga with you, what might a suggestion be that you would give?
Oh, I would say start with where you feel comfortable. You know, there's so many different resources. If you're looking to start with a mental health provider, remember that, you know, you should have a connection with that person. That relationship is incredibly important. If you don't feel comfortable with that person, go to somebody else, right? If that relation, and that's the same thing with, I tell this when, you know, people are looking for yoga classes or looking for a yoga therapist, is find the person that speaks to you, that you feel comfortable with, because if that relationship's not there, you know, it's okay to say, you know what, I thank you for your time and I appreciate you. However, I feel like our relationship would be better served if I was working with somebody else. And that may be the thing that they, all of a sudden they say, oh, wow, okay, maybe I need to let go of whatever it was that was preventing me from being able to communicate with that person, right? So there's, again, it's, I find that when we're working with a mental health provider, it helps us really be able to return to that I am a student of me for the whole entire life that I'm lifetime that I'm here. If I want to be a better me, I should use all of the resources that are available to me, whether it's reading a book, whether it's going to a yoga class, whether it's going to a meditation, or going hiking in the woods for a week, working with a mental health provider that's giving me the tools to do the work for myself.
Yeah, I love that. Absolutely. I mean, coaching and mental health counseling go together so well, and especially what you're doing, where you're focusing on the body and the physical side. I always say that I wish Inside Out would, the movie Inside Out, I wish they would do another one, but like Magic School Bus, the body, and show the connection. There, because how cool would that be? And so, we're coming at these things from different sides, right? We're coming from the mind and thoughts and feelings, and you're coming from the body. But the truth is that that intersection is really what makes a difference. And so, if we're strong in our connection with our body, our understanding of what happens when we do certain things with our body, and what feels good to us and what doesn't feel good to us in our body, and then we're comfortable in our mind as well of what thoughts feel good to us, what feelings are we having, then we can really bring that connection to fruition. So absolutely love that, Eva. So wonderful to have you here as always. We just love having you here. Such great discussion. You bring such a unique perspective to stress and to chronic fatigue, which is just very helpful. And you guys can find Eva on Facebook, Instagram, or YouTube at Eva Z-Z-E-E Wellness, where she offers private sessions as well as online group format sessions. And she will do yoga treatment planning as well. So check that out on her website at www.evazeewellness.com. Thank you so much for being here, Eva. We love having you here. Thanks again to our co-host today, our guest host, Carell Richards of In Divine Time. We love having you here as well. Just brings such a different, unique perspective, and such great questions and discussion. So thank you all so much for this. And we love having you here.
I love being here. You can tell, right?
Yeah.
I'm Eva Zobian Wolf, and I need a counselor.
All right, awesome. Well, I'm Krista Hunt.
And I'm Julie Johnson.
And I'm Carell Richards.
And we need a counselor.
And so do you.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to the You Need a Counselor podcast. We are so grateful that you're here. Now, we want to hear from you. Text us or give us a call at 515-650-3231. You can also find and connect with You Need a Counselor on Facebook and Instagram. If you've enjoyed today's show, please take a moment to like, review, or leave a comment, as all of these things help others to find and benefit from the podcast as well. If you're in the state of Iowa and interested in mental health counseling or behavioral health intervention services, give us a call at 800-531-4236. And if you're a provider seeking play therapy CEUs, you can find us on patreon.com/youneedatraining. We'll see you for the next episode, Sunday at 5.